Today is June 15th, 2009, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, episode number 152, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, tape applicator. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit MacObserver.com/AWR. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, anything in the show, anything relating to the show, or anything that we do show or don't show, shoot us a note at AWR@MacObserver.com.
Tape applicator?
Yes, tape applicator. complete with the sound effect. It goes with me everywhere I go.
Okay, so please enlighten me on the tape applicator title.
Well, it's a narcissistic choice for the week because but back in the day before you had things like Pro Tools and Logic, mm-hmm. or even GarageBand, when edits would be made to a song, they would literally be cut and taped together. That's how the big boys did it in the studio. So having just finished this big long multi-day session in the studio with our producer, I'd be tape applicator. See, it's very nice. It's very self-centered.
As well, it should be.
So yeah, I'm Brian Chaffin, tape applicator.
you entertain me, and thank you.
Don't you wish that everywhere we went, we could have like sound effects follow us?
You know, we have the technology, so there's no reason why we can't.
Like when you're walking down the street, wouldn't it be cool if a Foley artist was making Oh, wait, maybe we actually make noises when we walk down the street.
Actually,
there's a flaw in my plan.
Actually, I do have a Foley artist that goes with me everywhere.
That's good.
That weird short little guy you see following me around at Macworld Expo.
That's who that is.
It's my Foley editor. Yeah.
That explains the shoes on his feet.
Yep.
darn it. I messed up the joke. That explains the shoes on his hands.
It was still funny.
Oh, would have been so much funnier if I'd done it correctly.
I know. But the vision that I had in my head was this guy following me around that has shoes on when no one else around me is allowed to wear footwear.
Exactly. if only I had meant that. Hey, speaking of meaning things, I'm hoping that we can actually have this in place for the next show. But we are now ready for some changes that we've suggested. We're gonna have a name change for the show.
Right.
That sort of, you know, better explains the show.
Right. And just so everyone knows, it does not include dumbass in the title.
No, it should. That would be some truth in advertising, I suppose.
Yeah, but that would also be too narcissistic.
But we have a new theme song as well, and I think we should give our listeners just a little bit of a taste of it.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, so let's cue that here. That'll be kicking off, hopefully, the next show. If you hear the bass line that normally begins the show with the next one, that means you know that we've procrastinated.
But only because we've been working on coming up with new titles for you.
Exactly. But hopefully everybody can get behind that. We haven't actually figured out the entire format yet. We think we're going to keep the bass licks for I don't know. We're working on that.
Yeah,
we're working on that. You know, it's been a long time in the coming.
I have a feeling that as we massage the final layout, we'll probably get right down to editing before we decide what we're going to do for bumpers.
Us?
I know it comes as a shock.
I know it does. It does. All right. Well, that's enough. That's enough chit chat. Let's get to what we're here for, which I think is WWDC week.
It is. But before we hop into that, Are you on Twitter?
I am.
No way.
I totally am. I am at TM O'Brien. It's TM O'Brien.
Wow. What an amazing coincidence, because so am I.
You're TM O'Brien too? That would explain some things.
Yeah, it certainly would.
I keep wondering what, you know, why it is I'm having a chai. I don't even like chai.
I know it's weird. And what's up with your pants?
Yeah, I don't know. They apparently keep getting lost. I don't even remember it. Anyway, who are you on Twitter?
I'm Jay Gamet. J-G-A-M-E-T.
You know, that works out because your name is Jeff Gamet.
You know, it's an amazing coincidence.
It is. It is. That works. And you can also follow the Mac Observer.
That's right. And that's, what is it? Mac Observer. That's amazing. Yeah.
We actually had a lot of fun on keynote day. We had people that were Twittering in to participate in our keynote coverage.
Yeah, it was great. We had people participating at our Mac Observer Twitter account and at the account we've set up for live event coverage, Mac Observer Live.
Yeah, that was actually it was awesome. I love Twitter. Twitter is fun. If you're not on Twitter yet, you should check out Twitter. You have some quick tips on Twitter posted, don't you?
I do, actually.
Let's link them in the show notes.
Okay, we can do that. We have the technology.
We can do that. As a matter of fact, everyone hearing this, to them, we've already done it.
You know, temporal mechanics. It's an amazing thing.
It is.
Yeah.
All right, hit us up, man.
Okay. This week is our Worldwide Developer Conference wrap-up, and Apple gave us plenty to talk about. The iPhone 3GS is shipping this week, and demand is already high. AT&T can't keep up with iPhone features. The new MacBook Pro models arrived. Snow Leopard is shipping in September. And Safari 4, it's already on our hard drives. Apple put to rest a long list of rumors when it unveiled the iPhone 3GS during the WWDC keynote. The new model maintains the same form factor as the current iPhone 3G, but offers faster performance, longer battery life, and a 3-megapixel digital camera. The new camera includes autofocus, white balance adjustment, macro shot support, video capture, and video cropping, too. The iPhone finally gets voice control support and adds screen zooming, high contrast, and audible menus for the visually impaired. As expected, the iPhone 3GS includes a built-in digital compass and automatically orients Google Maps to the direction you are facing. It also includes support for a faster 7.2 megabit network, and that means users can take advantage of faster data transmission speeds once AT&T completes its 3G network upgrades, which is probably still months away. The new iPhone costs $199, that's US dollars, for the 16-gigabyte model, $299 for the 32-gigabyte model, and that's assuming you are new to AT&T or never upgraded from the original iPhone. For buyers that don't qualify for any of the upgrade pricing, affordable is a term that doesn't apply. The 16-gigabyte iPhone 3GS will cost $599 without discounts, and the 32-gigabyte model will cost a whopping $699.
Speaking of the iPhone 3GS, AT&T has sold out of its initial supply of pre-order units, though the company told me that customers who order on or after June 13th will receive their orders, quote-unquote, in about a week. That's after the device goes on sale on June 19th. As of this writing, AT&T is being a bit coy about whether or not there will be units on sale in its store on release day for those who did not pre-order, but neither Jeff nor I are going to hold our collective breaths while we wait to see. No, let's not. Let's not do that. It's a bad idea. Apple, on the other hand, has been shipping out pre-orders and is still accepting pre-orders online. If we look at last year, Apple had a lot more supply on hand for launch day, and indeed for several weeks after launch day, than did its carrier partner. Will history repeat itself? Signs point to yes.
That's truly the most reliable piece of technology we have.
It is, yes.
And speaking of iPhones in Apple stores, Apple will be opening early on Friday, June 19th for the release event. The company announced it will be opening its fleet of retail locations at 8 a.m. local time, and we advise you to expect there to be at least some sort of line, though they're not likely to be as long as we saw for the original iPhone or iPhone 3G. Why, you ask? Well, mainly because few, if any, iPhone 3G customers are eligible yet to upgrade, limiting the initial buying pool to customers with the original iPhone, which didn't sell in anywhere near the same numbers as its 3G descendant, or those adding a phone to their accounts and those new to the iPhone family. Also, Apple has met much of the initial demand for the device with its pre-ordering option, all of which should combine for a more manageable affair at the company's retail outlets. We should note that not all its locations will open early, and we provided a link for you to check availability right there on our show notes.
Yay, yay, yay us.
I know, yay us.
AT&T got off to a rough start during WWDC week when it was revealed that neither iPhone OS 3.0 nor iPhone 3GS will include the cutting edge for 2002 technology of MMS and tethering. For those wondering, MMS is an improvement over SMS that allows for longer messages and the sending of images in a text message, say an image taken on your fancy iPhone, something that was first introduced to the rest of the world in 2002 and has long been available in other countries and has even been available on other phones with services in the U.S. Just saying.
No way.
Indeed.
Wow.
Tethering is the ability to use your cell phone's data connection to connect your laptop to the internet. Developers and other attendees at the WWDC keynote address laughed at the obvious omission of the United States, as Apple VP Scott Forstall listed off the countries that would be offering the services. It was kind of funny. But in a fact later posted to AT&T's iPhone site, the company said that both services were coming. MMS will arrive, quote-unquote, later this summer, at no charge, we might add, while tethering is coming, quote-unquote, in the future, which is, you know, scarily nebulous. There is no word on whether or not there would be an additional charge for tethering.
Apple updated the 15-inch unibody MacBook Pro, so, like the 17-inch MacBook Pro, it sports a built-in battery that Apple says can last up to 7 hours. It also lost its Express card slot in favor of a built-in SD card reader, but bumped RAM capacity up 8 gigabytes and is still available only with a glossy display. The 13-inch unibody MacBook joined the MacBook Pro family and regained FireWire in the form of a FireWire 800 port in the process. It includes the same quality display and SD card slot found in the 15-inch model, along with a built-in battery, just like the rest of the Pro laptop line. The white MacBook is the only computer left with the consumer laptop moniker, and it's also the only model with a removable battery. The new 15-inch MacBook Pro starts at $1,699, and the 13-inch model starts at $1,199.
Mac OS X 10.6, the redundancy makes me grit my teeth, or Snow Leopard, will ship in September, and users won't have to save up as much cash as usual since the upgrade will set them back a measly 29 bones. That's instead of the usual $129 the company charges for most of its updates. 5 licensed family packs will only cost $49, again an immense savings. The upgrade focuses primarily on performance and stability improvements and lays the groundwork for future operating system changes. Snow Leopard will run on all Intel-based Mac models, PowerPC, need not apply, and will include built-in Microsoft Exchange support, which means iCal address book and mail users will be able to more easily connect and exchange data with Exchange servers in the workplace, assuming they are unfortunate enough to have to use them, which is a feature that Windows users have to pay for.
And after 2 public betas, Apple released Safari 4 for Mac OS X and Windows during WWDC. Versions are available for Mac OS X, 10.4, and 10.5, as well as Windows XP and Vista. The new version scored 100% on the ACID-3 standards test, where Microsoft's Internet Explorer web browser scored only 21%, which means that Safari is more compliant with web standards than Internet Explorer. IE is, however, far more compliant with Microsoft's self-declared standards, so at least it has that going for it. Safari 4 is available as a free download at the Apple website, or you can just fire up the software update application and get it from there.
And in Windows, I think you can get it from at the Apple Updater. Apple Update. I forget what it's called. I don't have a Windows machine in front of me.
Right.
Alrighty, that sound means, at least for this week, that it's the Context Machine. That's where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on. And let me start with that question, that compass question.
Okay.
You know the bit about the reorienting Google Maps to face the direction that you're on?
Yes.
That you're facing? What if I don't want that?
You can shut that off.
That's good. I have a weird learning thing when it comes to maps. If I am looking at a map, like say a GPS unit, and it's changing its orientation according to my direction, I will not learn where it is that I've gone.
You know, I can totally understand that. I learned how to read maps long before we had digital options available to us.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're reading a map, a traditional printed map, that's designed to be oriented to north all the time. And Right. That's how I read maps. So I probably – well, I'll try that feature where it orients just so I can talk about it intelligently or as intelligently as I can. And then I'll probably shut it back off and leave everything oriented north so that it's more comfortable and familiar to me.
Yeah, I can read a map just fine when it's changing direction according to my orientation. I just don't learn anything. I don't learn anything about the geography or you know, this, you know, how to actually navigate in the future without the map. So I'm glad that can be shut off. That's good.
It is. But, you know, having that option there I think is important because there's a lot of people that need that visual representation that more closely matches the direction they're facing. And I think it probably also makes things easier for turn-by-turn directions.
Absolutely, yeah. My wife is someone who likes to have the map change, for instance.
There you go.
So much irony there. So we have also the iPhone 3GS itself.
Yeah, and first up, I think it's actually really cool that the body is not changing. So all of the iPhone cases we already have for the 3G
mm-hmm.
still work. That's good for people that are upgrading from an iPhone 3G. And I think it's also really great for third-party companies that are making accessories. They don't have to start over again.
Yeah, I agree. It's great for them. It's great for everybody for the stability factor. And it's also, I think, it's even good for Apple. You know, it's good for them to leave themselves room to go in the future.
Oh, yeah. And they found a form factor that's working really well, so there's no need to mess with it right now.
Right. So let's there's so many things to talk about on the iPhone 3GS. First of all, the various rumor outlets, including I might add rumor rags like the Wall Street Journal. That were quoted, and I'm not actually bagging on the Wall Street Journal there. I love the Wall Street Journal. I'm actually bagging on the security of all the various Taiwanese OEMs.
Oh, yeah. Those companies leak like sieves.
They leak like sieves. And it seems like all of the new features were pretty much covered ahead of time. Apple had very little secrecy to, very little to unveil in terms of the iPhone 3GS.
Yeah. Yeah, it. On one hand, it was a surprise because they rolled the whole thing out. But on the other hand, it was merely a series of confirmations of information that had already been leaked from these other companies.
Yep, and I don't see that changing as long as Apple is building these things in Taiwan. I just don't see it changing.
No, and what that tells me is we can expect to have this same game the next time Apple's getting ready to do a big update because they're not going to switch their entire manufacturing process. They have something that's very efficient right now. It doesn't make sense for them to change that.
Well, and the firms in Taiwan that do this sort of thing for companies like Apple, they have a lot of expertise and being able to make this stuff cheaply and be able to, you know, in the case of the people that are working with Apple, being able to make it to Apple's somewhat exacting standards.
Right. And of course, that's important. Now, if Apple wanted to, they could build their own facility and make everything in-house, so to speak. But that would cost so much more.
Yeah. You know, I wonder if it would be, at this point, I wonder what the economics would be of a company like Apple or another electronics firm building manufacturing facilities in, say, the Rust Belt, and where, you know, unemployment is sky high, real estate is dirt cheap, and there are a lot of skilled workers who don't have jobs. I wonder what the economics would be these days of doing that sort of thing.
You know, that's actually a really good question.
And beyond our purview.
Yes. And so I will actually just kind of jump back a week and say, well, Apple, to a degree, is keeping some of that local, since they're going to be building that server farm in North Carolina.
Right. But that's not manufacturing. That's,
no.
You know, that's managing a, you know,
right,
a service that they have to manage.
Right. But, yeah, that would be kind of interesting if a company like Apple decided that they were going to bring their manufacturing process back on shore.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to happen.
Oh, no.
And be that as it may, so let's look at there's an interesting thing here. So a year ago, Apple releases the iPhone 3G.
Right.
It's a big success. It's a huge success. It's a fabulous success. And the reality is that part of why it was such a huge success is that the original iPhone, which had been released less than 1 year before, it was announced the year before, but it was released less than 1 year before.
Right.
Right. That device had not sold in huge quantities.
Yeah, it was a better seller than a lot of people expected, but it certainly wasn't the iPhone 3G.
Right. So there are lots of people that could get into the iPhone 3G. And in addition, we had a different kind of service plan where AT&T was handing over a percentage of its data plan to Apple. So they weren't paying an upfront subsidy. They were effectively paying a royalty. Right? Are you with me here?
Yep. And I like your use of royalty. That totally makes sense here.
So AT&T had a lot of good reasons for wanting to upgrade people from the iPhone to the iPhone 3G, those few millions of people who had actually bought one. Right?
Right.
So there's a lot of incentive for AT&T, a little less from Apple, in that Apple, you know, like, if you're still using an iPhone 3G, you've made Apple a ton of money. Excuse me, the original iPhone. You've made Apple a ton of money if you're with AT&T. But now we have, 1 year later, we have the iPhone 3GS, and basically no one that bought an iPhone 3G in the last year is eligible to upgrade for on the cheap. You can upgrade if you're willing to pay full price.
Right. Or a lot of people are getting the $200 discount.
Sure. Yeah. Well, a lot, really? A lot?
Yeah, actually, more people than I would have expected.
Yeah, but it can't be anywhere close to a majority, even a simple majority.
You know, with as confusing as the information has been over the past week, it's so hard to say, but you're probably right. All I can say for certain is that I qualify for the $200 discount.
Gotcha. And you know, plus on top of that, iPhone sales accelerated in the last 6 months over the first 6 months of its existence. So here's my point. Here's my long, belabored point that we've taken forever to get to. Apple has introduced the 3GS with the same form factor 1 year after the first iPhone was released. The upgrade cycle is basically 18 months in terms of subsidies.
Right.
So is Apple basically showing us what is going to be a two-generation business model for this? So let's just call the next one the 4G, just because we can, just for the sake of argument.
Sure.
So Apple releases the 4G in June of 2010, and the 4GS with the 4G Plus in June of 2011. And then those two models would have the same form factor. So it's not as much of a, you know, it's basically, it allows Apple to continue to goose sales into the second year of this device's existence without completely alienating previous users, and, you know, without it having, you know, without it being such a major upgrade that people are always going to wait.
You know, if Apple is attempting to make a strategic move with the product cycles and buying patterns, mm-hmm. they may very well have been intentionally setting this up so that they have the two groups that are alternating buying. Like, they're assuming people are going to keep a specific model for 2 years.
Right.
And so then you always have one group leapfrogging the other. So every year you have a set group of people that can always be expected to upgrade.
Right. I think that's what they may well be doing here with this, and it's certainly smart. Again, I think it's smart for them to give themselves room to, you know, to do the smaller form factor in 2 year cycles instead of 1 year cycles. It's certainly good in terms of the accessories, because, you know, I think the last thing you want to do is for those who can upgrade, the last thing you want to do is to discourage them from doing so because they don't want to replace their case and everything else that they got.
Right. And I know there's people that hold off on making a phone purchase especially with the iPhone, because they know what case they really like to have. And until the case has been updated for the new form factor, they hold off.
Right. Right. Yeah. I actually waited. I waited until I could to order one before I could get the Vaha case.
And see, you're a perfect example of that. And so if I end up getting an iPhone 3GS, I don't have to replace my iFrog's Lux case. I just pop it off the old one, put it on the new one, and keep going.
Yeah, I think, by the way, that's the next case I'll be getting.
Oh, I love that case.
Yeah, it's a good case. It's a good case. So the other thing that I wanted to talk about, although this is more of an iPhone 3.0, an OS 3.0 kind of thing, is the autofocus. No, that actually is only the 3GS, isn't it?
Yes, the autofocus and the macro are iPhone 3GS.
Yeah, of course they are. I'm sorry, it's been a long week, folks. Those are both very cool features, and really kick the pants out of any other phone camera phone that's out there.
You know. Yeah, they do. And I'm really looking forward to seeing those features in action, seeing what type of quality people are getting. And I think for a lot of people, and I'm thinking of us actually, when I say a lot of people, you know, if we decide that we're going to start doing video reporting at different conferences and expos, being able to do that with an iPhone instead of having an iPhone and like a flip in your hand. Mm-hmm. That would be so nice. I mean, that's one less device to have to carry around with you everywhere you go.
Yeah, you know, but there's still, I don't know. Quality still is. The quality is going to be much improved. The ability to have an area of focus is awesome. The ability to do macros and stuff, that's really cool stuff. But I don't know. I don't think it's going to be a device for trying to take even a semi-professional video for like a video cast.
You know, I'm picturing this as something that you would use for just like on the floor webcast type things, and nothing that you would expect to have at a higher resolution than someone viewing in a web browser.
Right. All right. Yeah. Fair enough.
And now, see, and if you're thinking of anything more than that, well, then I have a feeling that you'll be disappointed with the camera.
There's one more thing about the iPhone, though.
Okay.
One more thing. Is this device going to be enough to continue to boost sales for the device going forward?
I think it is. And I think the biggest hindrance to growth in the United States over the next year for iPhone is AT&T.
I am really happy with AT&T, but I have to say I fear that I agree, especially if they're going to charge for tethering. That's just wrong.
You know, my fear is that they'll charge like $60 a month for tethering, and I wish they wouldn't charge anything. But if they do charge, they need to keep it in line with what they're charging their BlackBerry users, which is like $20 a month. I would prefer to not see a tethering charge for iPhone users.
Well, neither of us will see a tethering charge because we happen to have been lucky enough to download NetShare when it was still available.
That's right.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, and so I will continue to use NetShare because my tethering needs are typically like an emergency thing.
Yeah, likewise. And NetShare, by the way, folks, was an application available through the App Store for a very brief period of time that allowed you to tether your notebook with your iPhone, and AT&T basically made, or, you know, I don't know if they made Apple or if Apple agreed to, whatever, but it was pulled, but Jeff and I were able to get it while that was available.
Yet, you would have just laughed if you had been here at the TMO Central Towers when NetShare came online, because, you know, it was online, and then it was pulled, and then it was back for a few hours.
Yeah, download.
Yeah, and and so my office is on the lower level of our Central Towers, and so I was on the upper level, and I get a phone call from a friend saying, NetShare just went online, and you would have thought I had been shot the way I jumped up and ran, came barreling down the stairs into my office and hopped online and ordered it immediately and watched the little spinning thing the whole time, just fearing that Apple was going to yank it in the middle of my download.
Of your download. You know, I fear that it occurs to me that it's probably not going to work under iPhone OS 3.0.
You know, I hope that's not the case.
But I bet you it does not. I bet you it will not work.
But if it doesn't work, we know the people that can tell us how to figure out how to get something like that working again.
That's true. And then maybe we'll share.
Yeah, and maybe we will.
Well, so I think that the iPhone 3GS is a good device. I think that it will continue to get sales. But I think that really where Apple's going to see increased sales is by reaching a little bit lower into the pool of consumers in terms of economics. I'm not being belittling. By lowering the price of the iPhone 3G itself to $99.
Oh, yeah, that's right. $99 for the 8-gig iPhone 3G. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I have a feeling that's going to do a lot to help grow the iPhone family.
It should. It'll probably do more, at least in some ways, than the 3GS itself will, because I don't know how many new customers the 3GS is going to. I don't know. We're gonna have to see how that plays out. But the lowering of the price to $99 for the 3G is a smart move. It was just a really smart move all the way around.
It was, and I'm sorry to see the 16 gig iPhone 3G go, but I totally get why that has to happen. Mm-hmm. Because the 16 gig model needs to be the 3GS.
Yeah, it's totally an issue of positioning, and not even of economics. It's all about positioning and you know, having a tiered product line.
Right. I mean, this is like having MacBook Pro versus MacBook. You have to have that distinct break between the product lines to give people an incentive to go to one or the other.
Oh, bless you. What a great segue, too, because
thank you.
We should talk about the MacBook Pros. That was beautiful.
Thank you.
MacBook Pros. What do you think?
See, I thought you were going to talk a little longer, and so I had a drink of water. But that's okay, because I've recovered now. And okay, so here's what I think. Apple going to the whole MacBook Pro line from 13 inches on up. Mm-hmm. Makes sense because they needed to keep adding in all of these new features into the MacBook line to make sure that they had the power that they wanted and the feature set for the price point, and the line had blurred. And really,
the line had blurred. But I gotta wonder what it doesn't make a lot of sense for Apple to not offer some kind of consumer product line. So my question is whether or not they're clearing the way for a new form factor. I mean, I've been saying all along that Apple is not going to release a Mac OS X based netbook, that they're going to release an iPhone OS based netbook.
Well, they already have. It's called the iPhone.
Well, yeah, but something a little more, a little bigger that truly will do a little bit more to meet that need than the iPhone does.
Right, and that's your iPod Super Touch.
That's my iPod Super Touch that we've talked a lot about already. So my question, though, is I can't help but feel that Apple is going to release a new form factor for that they're going to call a MacBook, and that it may well be trying to compete in this sub-$899 market.
You know, I think that the MacBook name will continue, just like you're thinking. And not having a truly consumer-level laptop for the students and the people that don't want the pro features totally makes sense. So what is that going to end up being? Well, I don't know yet. It wouldn't surprise me if it is something along the lines of the iPod Super Touch, or maybe they're coming up with a new product that will still be a fold-up clamshell type device like the MacBook is. But you know, with Apple, it could be anything. They're so good at surprising us and releasing a product that we just simply didn't anticipate.
Unless, of course, they're having it built in Taiwan.
In which case, we'll have we'll probably have all the specs well before they do their announcement.
But seriously, I guess the short version is that neither Jeff nor I think that we've seen the last of the MacBook name.
Oh, no. The MacBook name is not going to go away. Apple has made a clear point of having the pro and consumer version of their products. You know, we have the Mac Pro and we have the iMac. And then we have the MacBook Pro and the MacBook. And, you know, to a degree, you could even say the same thing with iPhone and iPod Touch, because one has the phone features and the other doesn't, although that's not quite as good an analogy. But they always have the two versions. So there's something else that's going to drop into that space that's left open by the MacBook line. Because that white MacBook that we have right now, I think that's going to go away before too long.
It's absolutely going to go away. It's positively going to go away. It's going to go away and it's going to get replaced. So we'll just have to look and see what it is. I wonder if that's what they're trying to arrange for Steve to introduce with his comeback. I still think it'll actually be the iPod Super Touch, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. And if he comes back at the end of June, then we only have a couple weeks to wait.
It's true. It is true. It is true. All righty. Now seems like a dandy time to talk about our sponsor.
You know, that was a great segue as well.
Not really.
You know, I'm trying to make you feel good here, man.
No, thanks. So our sponsor this week is Smile on My Mac, and I had the pleasure of going to the Smile on My Mac party at the WWDC.
Oh, great.
Gene throws a good event. Thanks, Gene. We love you, Gene.
Gene, we do love you. You rock. And you know, the whole Smile on My Mac crew is great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the product we're going to be talking about this week is Disk Label 6.
Yes, the newest version that was just released. It was just released in May. It was released a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. So it's still hot off the press and has that fresh-baked smell.
It does. And speaking of fresh-baked, what it does is it makes labels for your disks. Go figure.
I'm laughing at how you took, and speaking of fresh-baked, and
you know, I had this whole thing in my head. I was going with you press a CD, and then you make the label, and it's, you know, smells fresh baked, and it just kind of went nowhere.
Okay, I know how.
And I'm waving my hands right now. Right now, I'm like waving my hands in the air as I'm describing this, and it's like completely ridiculous.
All right, it's okay. I figured out how to tie it back together.
Bring us back together.
It's like your own Easy Bake oven for labels.
Oh, nice! Oh, it is. So basically, you can make labels for discs, for CDs. You can make labels for DVDs. You can make for either. And it is really it's a great way to give some kind of disc that you're burning a very professional look.
It is. And the great thing is you don't have to be a designer to be able to make a really good professional looking label and liner jacket for your discs, because they have all these fantastic professionally designed templates that are included with the package. And then like at holiday seasons, they'll roll out special packages for whatever the event is. Mm-hmm. And if you want to go in and modify any of these, you can. If you want to start from scratch, go for it. There's a lot of flexibility, but it makes it really easy to make really professional-looking labels.
And the folks at Smile on My Mac, at our special page, that's smileonmymac.com/AWR, a link that we happen to have in the show notes, they're offering 20% off of this particular product. So, you know, now they've had discounts for our listeners for all the products. And right now the discount is for this particular one. And if you want it, you should get it, because it's probably going to change the next time they're working on a new app that they want to promote.
Right. And so snatch this up while you can.
Yeah. And there's information on there. You can see some of the templates. There's screenshots and whatnot of some of the templates of the things that you can make. And there's more information about the product. It's good. They're good folks. They make good products. We want you to support them like they support us. So that's Smile on My Mac. Go to smileonmymac.com/AWR, or you can get the link in the show notes. And the price right now is $35.95. That's $35.95.
Oh, wow.
I'm sorry, I'm lying to you. It's $28.76.
Oh, even better.
It's 20% off. The retail price is $35.95. But if you get it through us, it's $28.76, and that's a 20% discount. All the information's right there, so thanks to them.
Yeah, that's awesome. Great program and great price. Go snatch up your copy now.
And speaking of great programs.
And great prices.
And great prices, yes, they both work, because we're going to move on to Snow Leopard.
Yeah. And I can't wait to see how we tie Easy Bake Oven back into this. That's okay. We've got time to figure it out.
Yeah. All right. I can't figure it out.
Well, we'll see if I come up with something.
Okay. You try that. So Snow Leopard, good looking stuff. You know, we saw a lot of, we were shown Snow Leopard a year ago.
Right.
But we saw a lot more of it. And, you know, it's going to be cool. And I say that I've got an 8-core Mac Pro here, and I cannot wait for the entire operating system to be able to take better advantage of all those cores.
Oh my God. You're going to have to bolt your computer down.
Yeah. Or something. It's pretty cool. And you know, it looks good. I like the new feature where you can get an expose look of everything that's open in the dock in a dock app by, you know, I think it's command. Is it command clicking?
I can't remember what.
I don't remember it. I'm so tired right now. I just can't remember.
That's okay, but when it ships, that'll be something that I'll write a quick tip for. So we'll just refer to that. So in the future, you'll be able to check out the quick tip on how to do that.
Right. Now, Snow Leopard does not include a lot of user interface changes. And
right.
That's a big part of why Apple has made this $29 instead of the usual $129.
Yeah, you know, it makes sense, because the average user would not be able to see the value in paying $129 for this application or for this operating system.
No, it's a hard sale to someone who's not after that speed. And let's be honest, it's been a long time since, getting a faster computer was a really compelling reason to upgrade, because the hardware is pretty much outstripped the software in terms of ability for both Mac and Windows.
Yeah, so one of the things that makes this cool for me is that Apple is fine-tuning the operating system to take advantage of the power that the computers have, because most of that is wasted, really.
Yeah. Yeah, and stuff like OpenCL, again, that's a hard sell for upgrading, but it's really, really cool.
Yeah, it is.
Do you remember OpenCL?
Yeah, let's see. OpenCL is See, there's so many new things. That's the one that's part of Grand Central, right?
No, actually, that's the one where they're taking the GPU and using it to do scientific calculations.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, that's a cool new feature for at least some folk, right?
Yeah.
But it's not something that's going to, you know, be able to be easily sellable. So this price point that they picked at $29, I think that it's a good price point. People will pay it. They will happily upgrade for that $29. They're going to be delighted with how fast their new system is, and things will be in place. It should be very easy for Apple to get a very large percentage of the Leopard user base up to Snow Leopard, for all the changes that will come in software for their other applications over the next year to 2 years.
Yeah, you know, for Apple, it totally makes sense to do what they can to make it as close to a no-brainer upgrade as they can, because there's so many powerful things that come along with having Snow Leopard. But if developers don't see a lot of people using Snow Leopard, why would they code to take advantage of those features?
Right, exactly. Exactly. So it's going to be good. I can't wait. What's the date? It's September, right?
It's September. Apple hasn't given us an exact date, but September. And I think that's kind of funny that Apple should say, yeah, it's coming out in September, now that Microsoft has announced that Windows 7 will be shipping on October 22nd.
And I think the Windows 7 is largely going to be a window dressing, if you'll pardon the intended pun, upgrade over Vista. The main feature set of Windows 7 is going to be that it's not Vista. That's my understanding so far.
Yeah, and actually for Windows users, that's probably a big selling point.
Well, yeah, but there's not going to be really that much different about it. It's going to look slightly. Anyway, be that as it may, Snow Leopard I think is going to bring a lot more practical improvements for users, even if they don't notice them. And it's not just for those with an 8-core Mac Pro, because the Mac Pro is the slowest selling Mac on the planet. You know, there are quad core iMacs out there, and there are a ton of dual core MacBook Pros and MacBooks out there.
Right.
And there's even more dual core iMacs too, you know. And all of those systems, if it's got more than one processor or more than one processing core, they're going to see significant improvements, and it's going to be cool.
Yeah, it is going to be very cool. I'm really looking forward to this upgrade. And I'm so excited. I'm not putting the right words together. It's like the bulb burned out my Easy Bake Oven.
You know, I was listening a couple things before we close out the show here. We had a couple of requests to put the Christmas skit up online as a separate download. This is a little sketch that we put together last week for the show. Talking anyway, we've done that. We've put it up. It'll be linked to in the show notes. But I noticed when I was chopping it up and when I was actually breaking that into a standalone download, that you made a joke about how, you know, at least the kid didn't have to open a Zoom.
Right.
And that wasn't anything we had scripted. That was something you just came up with the top of your head, and it cracked me up. But I noticed that my laughing sounds like a demented, the Sesame Street guy, the Count.
Oh, just the Count.
The Count, right. And the, my maniacal laughter. That's, yeah.
So now I'm waiting for whatever sket we come up with for the Zoom where, oh, I've got it, where the Count counts all the people that buy the Zoom HD. He goes, one Zoom one. HD, and then has to stop.
That's it. That's funny stuff right there. Exactly.
And of course, my Count impression was just brilliant, wasn't it?
Yep. it was something at the very least.
Oh, it was something.
It was something. All right, Jeff, take us out. We appreciate everybody's forbearance today as we were, I'm tired.
Oh, it amazes me every week that we get through this with that we get through this. Yeah,
indeed.
All right. And if you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to awr@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. Feel free to follow me on Twitter. I'm at twitter.com/jgambit.
And you can follow me at twitter.com/tmobrian. That's Brian with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that's all for this week.
As always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com.